Renting party equipment has become one of the fastest growing businesses.
Stay tuned as we discuss start to finish how you can make $10,000 a month.
This video has 11 steps. We're gonna go over from start to finish, over every single thing that it takes to start a business and in the first month to make $10,000. This video is supposed to be used as a guide. We're gonna walk you through from your first month all the way to the 12th month, exactly how much you can make with reinvesting and then what the numbers look like and also the percentage of how you'll get there. Before we go any further, we need to make sure our market and our location is a good place to start rentals. There's a list of 7 things that we believe that you need to have in your market, you need to do. The first step, download Ultimate Checklist. It'll kind of help you walk through a lot of issues you might find. Number 2 is population. You need to understand the population in your area. If your population is smaller, it's going to be a little bit harder to get more clientele. For a general rental business, you're going to be looking at a population of, at least for a side hustle, of 200,000 people at least. And for a full-time business, you're looking at least around 1 million. And when we mean by a full-time business, we mean a business that you can eventually be able to sell and not just based off the asset value. Number 3 is event planners. If you're the only person in a town of 20,000 people who are doing rentals, you might still do very well. It just depends on competition and then how many people are in that area. The reason why you want to have as many event planners as possible, this shows that a lot of events are going on and the events can handle you in competition to be able to grow. And I'm not just saying just because there's competition means that you can't grow. All this is really just going over is that it makes it a lot easier to grow. If you're doing this full time, you want to at least have over 100 event planners in the area. Generally, if you're doing this as a side hustle, you want to at least have 20 event planners in your metroplex. Number 4 is going to be how many event centers are in your area. If you're in an area that doesn't have event centers, then you should be looking at specifically what event venues are there. You kind of want to figure out what do people rent at for these venue centers. In the DFW marketplace, we have 2. We have K Bailey's and we have Dallas Marketplace Hall. Each one of these event centers can hold over 20,000 people. Now, you don't need one of these to be successful, but if you want to do a full-time business and you don't want to travel far, you at least want to have at least 2 of these in your area. 1 would still be good. Now, if you're a side hustle, technically you can get away with none or you can get away with some depending on which way you're going to go. Number 5 is how many major festivals are going on around you. Now, you can discount this if you're not planning on doing anything related to festivals. You want to go ahead and search these out and you want to put these down on your spreadsheets to get as many of these as possible. But generally, you kind of just want to be over 10 or 20 a year. These festivals will at least do over 40,000 people. If you focus on weddings, you can go in and skip this. Number 6, how many sports teams are in the area? If they just have 1, then you're doing pretty well. Sports teams is a good way to work too, because eventually you can be able to do all of their events, and usually they do about 10-20 events a year, extending from just the games to even more stuff. I know for a lot of the baseball games on there, you might get 30-40 events that you might get in a year time, plus anything that the stadium does around it. In Dallas, we have football, the Dallas Cowboys, you already know. We have baseball, we have basketball, we have soccer, and we have hockey. This is a really big one that you, if you're planning on doing corporate events, that you need to set up. You need to figure out how many top 500 companies you have. Now, this really doesn't matter for the most part, but if you're doing bigger business, you want to at least have as many as possible top 500 companies. If you can have 5 to 10 on the list, you're doing pretty well. Now, if you have top 5,000 companies, you can work with those too as well. This is not saying that you're going to be only people you're going to be working with. It's just to know which companies are in your area so you can know which ones to target and reach out to. For the most part, we're not going to really worry too much about the competitors because we're going to come in with a solid product and at a good value. Next, Tina is going to show you how to legally set your rental business up.
Now that you've researched your market, let's get into how to legally start your business. First, what you need is your initial investment. So the budget we were looking at for this video was a $20,000 budget if you aren't looking for a vehicle and a $30,000 budget if you are looking for a vehicle. There are 3 ways that we personally recommend for you to do whenever you are getting your initial investment. The first way is through your savings. This should be whenever you're already planning on starting this business and you've already saved up this amount of money for the business. Second would be through business loans. In order to do this, you actually have to go to the bank and give them your business plan so they could see if they could approve you or not. Thirdly is collecting funds through family and friends. The only issue with that is if you don't pay it back, well, it could cause an issue with your relationship. So we primarily recommend the top 2 ways. The second thing that you need to do is get your LLC. If you go into any of our videos on YouTube, see that there's a starter, pro, and premium package. For the starter pro, you could get your LLC for free. The only thing you'd have to pay is the state fees that requires you to pay. So the third thing would be getting your employee identification number. And if you don't want to get your employee identification number through Zen Business, you could actually get that through the IRS. So let me show you how. So right here is the IRS page we have set up for apply for an employee identification number online. All you have to do is read through this, determine your eligibility, understand the online application process, submit your application, and wait for your application to return. When you get to the first step of getting your EIN, it will actually tell you that you need to identify what business your business is. So make sure you get your LLC before you even start getting your EIN. Click what works for you and just click and continue. Once your EIN application has been complete, you'll now look for your banking options. Now, there are two options that you could take. You could go the traditional banking route, or secondly, you could go to Novo Banking. Once you get on their website, which yes, you could access through the link in our description, we recommend 5 different accounts just to make sure that all your money is going to the right place. So the first account you should have is your unearned revenue account. This should hold all the money that clients have already paid once they book. However, this would be bookings that aren't within the week. So this would be farther out. Second is earned revenue. This account should hold all the money your clients pay for your events in that given week. Third is fixed expenses. This should be an account to pay for your monthly bills or anything that you know is a recurring charge that doesn't usually change. So this could be insurance, your bills, this could be car payments or anything like that. Fourth is cash on hand, and we typically recommend for 60% of the money that is in your earned revenue that isn't spent by the end of the week for you to move it all the way into cash on hand, because this is the amount that you have to spend. And the fifth account is owner profits. This is where all of your profits should be. Now we're going to go on to insurance. The first insurance you need would be insurance for your vehicles. This would basically just be liability insurance. Unless you are financing your vehicles, then you would get whatever insurance the dealership requires you to get. And if you really need to save money, you could even go to Root Insurance. Now that you have car insurance out of the way, you need to look for insurances for your business. If you click any of the links in our description on any of our videos, we'll have Next Insurance listed. So here I have Next Insurance pulled up for us, and you could see the different types of insurances that they provide. You could get a quote for each one just by clicking get a quote, but the first insurance we need is general liability. Protects you from general claims. What this is, if there's anything related to bodily injury that's a part of your general claims, they'll cover that for you. Typically, most, if not all, businesses need general liability. The second type of insurance you need is property insurance. This protects whatever property you're operating your business out of from weather incidences like fire, smoke, rain, ice, anything you could name of, plus vandalism and theft. All right, and Eddie will take it from here and explain what you should look for when looking for your storage option.
Okay, if you have a garage or a shed, then you can just skip this part and you can jump just right over to this time. Some of the criteria that we were kind of looking for to better optimize this location was something that's readily accessible by highway. The budget has to be around 5% of the revenue for the year. Also, it had to have some kind of access, 24 hours preferable. And the parking specifically for that unit that I'm talking about was $75 a month, so added on to the $185. If you needed to leave the vehicle there, you could, and you had that option. If you didn't want that, you know, you don't have to pay for that, but we like to always have the option just in case. Out of all the units that we looked at, which was a 10 by 10, we even looked at a 20 by 30. This is right here is a 10 by 20. For the budget that we have set, this would be the best ideal candidate to get that job done. On the list of things that we said we would buy, which would be 320 by 20, 200 chairs, 34 6-foot, and 13 16-inch rounds, it would fit in here perfectly. And then you still have so much room. One thing is with our experience, me working with Xavier, I started off in my garage, but Xavier actually has storage units. When things start coming in here, you still need room to work. So you're gonna wanna clean the tables and chairs. You don't wanna mix the clean stuff with the dirty stuff. So this leaves you a lot of room to be able to do that. And it gives you room that you can still grow. So for the tables, the 6-foot, basically would be right here. There's different options. We can lay them flat. The type that we get, they nestle on top of each other, a certain design with lifetime, or you can stand them straight up and save space. For the poles, if we're gonna stand them straight up, well, they are gonna be right there. That's where the pole would stop. So you still have plenty of room. We can actually put anchors here and then run a chain opposite sides so they don't come falling down on us. The width of it has a big ordeal because the one that we looked at was a 10 by 10. It was basically like a doorway and it just makes things very difficult to get in and out. So basically this unit sits right in the front of the entrance. What he told us is that he has another unit at the same size towards the back because one thing we talked about is unloading, offloading. And he said that if we parked specifically right here, we'd be basically blocking the front entrance. So he's gonna put us down for another unit down that way to kind of make it that we're not bothering anybody, the flow of traffic and everything like that. So keep that in mind when you get a unit. Back at the warehouse, Tina's gonna show you what items you need to make money.
When starting an event rental business, you need to make sure that the first items you get could actually sell so that you can make more money. Here are the four items we would get if we were to start this event rental company right from the ground up. The first item is 3 20x20 high peak tents for an average cost of $6,000. The reason why we would get this tent is because it's the same shape as a 10x10 or a 15x15. However, it's bigger in size, so if you need something to cover a larger area, you'll have that. And if you need a tent that's even bigger than that, you could always double up your 20x20 for a 20x40. Additionally, tents are used year round to protect you from the cold and protect you from the sun, so this item is expected to run out all year long without sticking to a single season. If you get this product, you would be expected to make $1,125 a week with just these three tents. The second item is 200 of our white foldable chairs for a total cost of $3,200. The reason why we would get these chairs is because they're actually our most popular item all year long and all season long. And these chairs are great for indoor use as well as outdoor use, so the utility and range is there. This is expected to make you around $350 per week. Third, we would get 34 of our 6 feet rectangular tables for a cost of around $1,700. The reason why we would get a rectangular table is because, honestly, you need two types of tables for events. Some people like the round tables and some people like rectangular tables. The reason why we would get a 6 feet is because you could always double up a 6 feet to make a longer table. However, if you get an 8 feet table instead, you can't really cut that table down to fit a 6 feet. If you get this item, you're expected to make around $280 per week. Fourth, we would get 13 of our 60-inch round tables. This would cost you at around $1,625. And the reason why we would get it is, like I mentioned earlier, you need kind of a variety to run out to events. This is the average size of round tables you usually see at weddings and other events that may require a venue. They are a much more popular size than the 40-inch round tables, and they could seat a lot more people. This item is expected to make you around $195 a week. Now you're probably wondering, where do I buy these items from? So for our tents, we recommend Salina Tents. For the chairs, we recommend Global Events Supply. For tables, you could get them from Sam's Club. And for linens, we recommend CV Linens. I know I didn't list any linens that we would get on this list. However, if you're interested and you're in need of linens, please go to them. Now that you have a basic list of items that you should first purchase whenever you start your event rental company, now I'll tell you some items that you might consider purchasing after you've already gotten these items and you've already rented them out. First is we'd get linens on demand. What that means is whenever a client requests the linen, you would make sure that you have enough time to go get that linen and then rent it out to them before their events. Linens are fairly low costing, so buying them on demand will not hurt you as long as the total order of who you're purchasing the linens from exceed the amount that you would pay for those linens. Some of the popular linen sizes that you might consider are 90s by 132, 90 by 156, and if you have round tables, you'd get a 180-inch round linen. Some other items you would get is the black plastic foldable chairs. As I said, the white plastic foldable chairs are the best-selling items at Kelly Rentals, so having a black version of that will never be bad. And lastly, I'd get an 8 feet table or a farm table. Additionally, if clients are requesting for items that you don't have, you could always purchase them days before, as long as they're within a given time range. With that being said, with tents and chairs specifically, if the order is within 90 days, we would go ahead and purchase those tents and chairs. For tables, if it's within 15 days of the event, we'd go ahead and go get those tables. There may be other items that you would consider purchasing at the request of your clients. However, if you do, you'll just have to make sure that the item that you're purchasing is under the 50% profit margin of that event. With your inventory now stocked, you'll need to know how to price your items. Today, I'll be going over two pricing methods. The first one is competitive pricing, and the second is service-based pricing. And if you don't know what these methods are, please watch this video right here for an in-depth tutorial on how to do each pricing method. So the first pricing is competitive pricing. What this is you're calling around at different competitors in your area to see a quote of how much they price each of their items. You'll need to make sure that you collect from multiple rental companies and not just one or two. This way you could get an accurate look at what the average pricing is like in the current market. So to do the math, your rental price will equal your average competitor price times one, plus or minus, plus if you want to go above the average market rate, and below if you want to go below the average market rate, the percentage adjustment you would like to make. So if you would like to go 50% over, then you do plus 50%. And so forth. Next is service-based pricing. You'll typically use this pricing method whenever the item that you're renting out has a service component to it or requires you to set up, tear down. You'll do this pricing method so you don't lose any money in terms of the labor cost associated with setting up these items. Some items that might require this type of pricing would be tents, pipe and drapes, any machinery that requires you to set up yourself, or just anything like that. Now let's do the math for service-based items. Whenever you are doing this, your rental price should equal your item value, which is how much you bought the item for, multiplied by a percentage. This percentage is how much you want to make back every single time when you rent out that item. This means if you bought an item for $100 and you want a 50% return, you'll basically be getting $50 of that $100 every time when you rent it out. Divide the item value times percentage by 100, then you'd add the service cost. Your service cost will basically be how much labor, how much gas, or anything spent just to make sure that that item is delivered and there. Now that we've went over what items you should buy as well as how to price those items, you'll need a vehicle to deliver these items. I wonder what Eddie thinks about this.
Now that you're ready to look at vehicles, these are the things you're gonna need to look at to identify what best works for your situation. So everybody's situation is a little bit different, you know, what you're capable of driving. All these need to be looked at prior to actually pulling the trigger and buying the vehicle. So in this video, our budget is gonna be $10,000. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna look at a couple dealerships, Facebook Marketplace, and see what kind of fits our budget. Three vehicles that I highly recommend would be a regular pickup truck, nothing light duty. I would get something like in the 2500, a little three-quarter ton truck. That way you can do a little bit more as you grow, because you don't want to be limited and have something that you're still making payments on. So the truck that I'm looking at right now is a 2017 Silverado 2500. It's a work truck. It's perfect for the situation that I mentioned. The price here is $22,000, and I already know that with $5,000 we can get out of the lot with this truck, which is great, and then you'll have payments every like 2 weeks or anything like that. Good thing about this truck is that you can put a trailer on it and haul it around, and you can disconnect the trailer and then just use it as a day-to-day driver. This vehicle does use a lot of gas because it is a heavy-duty truck, so you're gonna get anywhere from like 10 to 13 miles a gallon on this thing. The next vehicle that I would be looking into getting would be a Transit, a high top Transit. And the reason being is the high tops generally are easier to get in and out and get loaded. High tops are generally higher in demand because, you know, fleet vehicles like Amazon and other delivery companies pick these up. So they might be a little bit higher priced than the regular pickup truck. Another thing to look at is also the maintenance of these vehicles. A lot of these vehicles, the maintenance costs cost more than others. For instance, the heavy duty trucks, they're gonna need more maintenance versus, you know, a Transit. Because the parts generally weigh a lot, and when they weigh a lot, you know, you hit bumps and stuff like that, and they just start wear and tear a little bit. The third vehicle that I would look into getting would be a box truck. But box truck's awesome. They have a lot of cargo space, but the only disadvantage I would say is if you're in an area that has really tight spaces, it really is tough to maneuver them around, along with the truck with the trailer. So if you're not comfortable with driving reverse in a big vehicle, you might want to go with the Transit, something a little bit smaller. smaller. Another thing is whenever you're buying these vehicles, try to get something with, not at too many miles. Try to look for something that has the miles, like, you know, anywhere from like 100,000 to 150,000, 160,000 miles. It's just gonna make the maintenance on the vehicle a lot easier as far as cost goes, and the vehicle's gonna be able to last a lot longer. I'm just browsing through, checking out box trucks. So there's different types of box trucks. There's a cutaway, which is basically where they got a regular van and they literally cut it and took the back portion off, and then they sealed it off and then put a box in it. And then there's NPRs, and then there's also bigger fleet vehicles that are like like big heavy duty, almost 18-wheelers type. You might need a CDL for that. It depends on the weight. But generally, if you're first starting off, I would recommend an NPR or a cutaway. They're generally cheaper. So here we got one. It's a 2006 3500, and it has a 16-foot box on it. So that one looks good. I would get something like that, and it's 9,800. Not too crazy as far as price, and I'm pretty sure we can negotiate it and get some kind of payments. It would meet the $10,000 mark that we had mentioned. And then we have a 2004 NPR, 6,210. So that would be enough. And then you have some extra money in case something happens. So the more space that you give yourself, because everything that you are buying is used. And don't be afraid and say, oh, I don't want to buy a used vehicle. It's most likely going to break. Even new vehicles break. I used to work at Ford Motor Company. You probably heard the story. And even the new stuff that just got off the line breaks. So don't be discouraged in buying a used vehicle. Just try to understand what you're buying and the maintenance that it comes with, and you'll be just fine. Okay, now that we've looked at everything online, one of the places that we had mentioned is Metro Auto Sales. They've actually given us permission to go over there and record. So we're gonna go over there, check out a couple of vehicles, show you what we're talking about. That way you can better understand why we suggest those three types of vehicles. So this bad boy right here would not make the pick. And I know that a lot of guys are like, but it's just nice and fuel economy. You're right. But the problem that we found in the past is it's very limited on the things that you can do. As you see, the bed is pretty small. You can still do stuff with it, but you're just gonna outgrow it pretty quickly. So I wouldn't recommend something like this. All right, so here we are, right inside the Beast. This is where you're gonna spend most of your time. So you wanna make sure it's something nice and comfortable. You don't want a beat up seat. This one looks good. We're gonna jump in this bad boy. The one thing that we like about the Ford or any kind of Transit, it's really roomy. Generally, it has a space for two people. So if you have a helper, he can come in here. Then a really cool thing that's awesome is there's usually a walk-in aisle here. The good thing about this one, it's a fleet vehicle. So they already installed these protector walls. So what happens is a lot of time in these high top vans, they won't have this, and God forbid anything falls over and knocks you out while you're driving. But that's what these bad boys are for. Just in case something does fall, it's not gonna knock you out while you're driving. And then there's also compartment room up here, which is great. You can put your paperwork, straps, any kind of extra little tools, anything you need up here is really cool. It's kind of, you're kind of off the ground as well. So a nice feel when you're driving this bad boy. But let's go check the cargo space. The cargo space is pretty good. You can stand up in here. You can put 6-foot tables standing up, throne chairs in here, plenty of chairs. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll hang linens off of these little frames. But a lot of times you'll see they'll have armor on the side just because stuff falls over and leaves dings on it. But this one doesn't. You can also put lift gates on here to ease things coming in, or put a ramp. We'll say if you're doing bounce houses and you want that option. But here goes the second door that I had mentioned to you. So sometimes when it gets really packed, this might be the next best option to do. And then you can also, like, as you're doing drop-offs, get out of your front seat and easily access the front through here. You just hop in, hop out. So it's really easy for somebody, you know, to come in and out of this thing. But that's one of my suggestions, is a high-top Transit, whether it be Ford, Chevrolet, Ram, Mercedes, it doesn't matter. But they're a really good vehicle because anybody can drive them as long as you know how to drive a car. Now we're gonna go look at a heavy duty truck that is great all around vehicle that you can even put a trailer on it and increase your towing capacity. Here we have a 2017 2500 HD. Let's go look at it. It's a truck, nice and heavy duty, just like I said. Let's take a peek at it and that way go over all the features it has. On this specific truck, like I said, heavy duty is always the best. When you're having big loads, pretty much anything that you want to put on it, you can put on it. It'll haul it no problem.
And the good thing about this truck is you can disconnect all the other accessories and you can use this for a day-to-day driver. Sometimes some people like to do that. The only bad thing I would say, if this thing breaks down, now you can't take mama to work, you can't take the kids to school. So keep that in mind if you're using it for business. Like I said, this specific truck I really like because it's four-wheel drive. I know some of you guys are out in rural areas, or if you back up too much and you get on the grass and you get stuck, this thing can be easily put into four-wheel drive and get out. It has a back row seat as well, so you can put a crew in here. A lot of times when we do tents, we'll take a truck and trailer just because of the amount of people that we can put in there. We're going to put a whole crew of five people in one vehicle, which is always good. Let's look in the back and let's see what else it has to offer. So here we're on the back of the truck. You have your receiver to put your hitch, the hook up a trailer. Then also you have a bed. Usually in the heavy duty options, you have a 10 foot option, 8 foot option. I think this one's like a short bed because it's not that long. But there are other options out there. The bed versus the other truck that I had mentioned to you is way wider. You can do a lot more things. You can put tables on one side, you can put poles on one side, you can put chairs in here. The sky's the limit with the truck, but just also keep in mind that the gas mileage and whatnot on them, they tend to be a little bit on the unfriendly side if you're on a budget. I would 100% choose the truck. That's what I personally started off with. I started off with an F-150, but if I could go back, I would get the 250 or any kind of a 3/4 ton option, just because it allows you to do more and you won't be sweating when you're having a heavy load and you're worried if your truck's gonna make it throughout the week. So for sure, get you something heavy duty, that way you can grow into it. So we're inside the Ford E450, which is a cutaway. As I mentioned, it's a van, so you're gonna have that van height. As you see the difference between the Transit and the cutaway, the Transit is always that height, so it's gonna be tall all the time. This one is not that tall in the actual cab. Once you get to the box, that's when the height difference comes into play. And then just like the Transit, this one has a door that leads you into the box itself. Just imagine this whole space here taken out. All these things that you see will basically be a bare bones, which will just be a box. This gives you way more space than the high top van Transit gives you. This would be ideal for more of a high volume delivery item. So you can put like 800 chairs in this thing. Plenty of tables. I know we do big conventions and we have a 16 foot box truck. Box truck's gonna be your ideal thing to go with. It's gonna be able to handle what you got. Okay guys, let's go back to the warehouse where I'm gonna show you how to clean and deliver your items. All right, so now you have your vehicle. Now you're ready to start doing your deliveries, your pickups, and getting on the streets and having some fun. I'm gonna show you what we do here currently in our company. For deliveries is always the most important, unless the customer paid for a specific time pickup. Otherwise, we always do our deliveries first. A day prior, we have everything routed up by our dispatching team. Just don't do it the day of, because stuff always happens and doesn't look as right, or you might catch a mistake if you do it a day prior. The first thing we're gonna do is look at the time frames that we have for our deliveries to make sure that we're not gonna meet those expectations. So it says 7 to 3 p.m. on one, the other one's 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The time right now is 9:14, so we're well within those times. Obviously, we're gonna do the one that needs the 3 p.m. because that one has the shortest time frame. So we'll get that knocked out. We'll go into order items. You might have a sheet of paper that just has a description of everything that's on the order. Here we can just click on it and look directly and see what's on the order. So this one has 350 black chairs, 45 8-foot tables, and then we'll look at the other one. So that one has 25 garden chairs and six foot. So nothing too crazy. We'll close those. And then the next thing what we'll do is we'll look in the comment section. It's on our application. It shows us any kind of prudent information. So this one says that the event is until tomorrow at 11 a.m. So that's good to know, because sometimes you surely don't want to be late to somebody's actual event. We try to deliver a day early so that if accidents do happen, it's not too big of a deal. If it was the same day, then we were going to put the most attention to get that done. That way we're not late to their event. Another thing you want to do is you want to make sure that your drive and delivering team is taking photos of the drop-offs. The reason why it's very important, because eventually you'll get a claim saying, hey, I didn't get all the items here, or, you know, this was damaged, or, you know, a lot of different claims. So pictures go a long way. Photos will ensure that the correct amount of items were dropped off at the location, and then everything was in working order. I'm looking through the items too that we had to pick up. Nothing too crazy, no real tents or anything like that take a long time. So once the deliveries are done, drivers will go off into the pickups. They'll call the client, the ETA,
how far they're gonna be. And then they'll get the items picked up, marked off in the system, and then we'll call back and check and see how their event went, make sure everything was good, and if there are any items that are left behind. If they were left behind, then we'll go pick them up. But otherwise, we'll be able to find that all out here in the warehouse, which is what we're gonna go over right now. So if you liked what you saw as far as our software, I know it's very exclusive. We're actually gonna release that out to our viewers here soon. If you did like it and you want to try it out, click the link below and check us out and sign up for the spot once we do release it out to the public. All right, now we're going to go into will calls. Everyone does it differently, whether it's, you know, paper and pen, or you have an app that does that for you. For you young bucks in the game, will call is basically customer pickup, okay? So that's whenever a customer decides, hey, I don't want to do delivery. Instead, I'd rather go with my own vehicle and pick up the items that I want to rent. We have one customer pickup on the 20th, and then basically the same thing. We're gonna look at it, the time frame they're gonna come in here, 9 to 5. We're gonna look at the items, which is 2 cocktail tables and 2 spandex covers. We're also gonna go look into the notes. So the event is actually that same day that they're picking up, and it says pickup time from noon to 1 p.m. So read the notes. I know up here it says 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. But in the notes, it says they're going to pick up between noon to 1 p.m., okay? So us knowing that, now what we're going to do is we're going to go through the inventory. We're going to pull all the items for the customer, and then we're going to put it in a designated location. So that way it's ready and it's pulled. So once the customer gets here, we don't have to be moving around looking for these items. They're ready to go, and we can go straight to loading up the customer's vehicle. And then once we're done with that, we're going to go into customer returns. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we have 7 customer returns to do. And it looks like one has already returned. That's why it's green, it's just completed. When the clients do get here, we'll ask for their name, and then we'll verify the equipment. So for instance, we'll just pretend that, I'm not even gonna try to say their first name, but this person right here, we're gonna pretend that they came, and we're gonna verify that they have 20 white chairs and then 2 8-foots. Then secondly, another thing I would remind you is to make sure that those items are yours. So here in our warehouse, we have specific brands. And what happens is a lot of times clients will get other rental companies and use them, and then they'll mix match and then try to return them. And it just won't work here because the tables won't sit properly, or the chairs won't, or it might be a little bit different color. So keep an eye on that whenever items are being returned from the customer. And whichever items did not get returned that day, we'll reach out to the customer and then verify if they're gonna come that day. If not that day, then we'll move over to the next day. After that, we will talk about further charges if the items aren't returned. But that's pretty much how we do will call here in our business. Now we're gonna move back into the warehouse. I'm gonna kind of show you how we clean it here. So we're gonna use an example, for instance, this table right here. It just came back from our pickups, and now that we're ready to get them clean. So the first thing we're gonna do is get a spray bottle with their clean solution. We use Simple Green here, but you can use any kind of clean solution. We just like Simple Green because if you get it on your hands day after day, it's not gonna eat it away, but it does a good enough job to clean the item. So. First thing you'll do is you'll spray the item down. If it's not too dirty, you'll just wipe it down. And this method, you can use tables, chairs, pretty much anything. If you have a more stubborn stain, what you can use is magic eraser. Garden chairs are really good with magic erasers, so you'll just get the magic eraser, whatever stain or dirt that you have on there, you'll just go at it until it comes off. You'll get that all cleaned up, put it in inventory. And then this bad boy is a scotch pad or a scuff pad. It's really good for stubborn stuff that really doesn't want to get off. Another method that you can use is a power washer. The only disadvantage I would say is that you have to dry it afterwards, but it does take off all the stains. So you just get a power wash your items down, dry it. And then once it's dried, you put it back in inventory. Here's a couple items that are gonna help your back and make life easier for you in the delivery industry. So the first off, we're gonna start off with a two-wheel hand truck or hand dolly. It's gonna come in handy when you have a long distance you have to walk and you don't wanna carry all these things by hand. So get one of these. And also what you're gonna wanna get is a moving blanket. Moving blankets come in handy because it will increase the longevity of your rental items. Little scuffs and stuff like that will end up turning into rust, or if you have like wood and get scraped up, it'll prevent damages basically in-house. So get yourself a moving blanket. Another thing you're gonna want is some ratchet straps, okay? Any kind of ratchet strap will do. These are like some Harbor Freight ones. They're super cheap. So you can use ratchet straps for, you know, tying things down that it doesn't move. When you're actually moving things, like sometimes you'll do stacks of chairs, you'll use a combo to strap things down because, you know, you'll hit a bump and it'll fall over. But if you have a ratchet strap, it'll hold everything together. And I've also used these bad boys to hold doors open. I'll run the strap all the way back. Or a backyard gate, you know, once it closes, just use that strap and it'll hold the gate for you. Secondly is your four-wheel dolly. It's gonna make life a lot easier. You put sacks of chairs on here. We've also used like two dollies and did tables and just stacked them on the tables, one in the front, one in the back. So a lot of different applications you can use a four-wheel dolly. And then lastly, you're gonna want some kind of cleaning solution to wipe it down and make sure everything's nice and presentable for your clients. Need an order for software and deliveries? Xavier's gonna show you the best software for your rental business.
So now you're at the point right now and you wanna set your website up, you wanna choose your rental software. Now, there is a multitude of different rental softwares out there, different website providers that you can go with. And to be honest, depending on each one of your needs, really depends on which way where you should go. So the ones that I really like, and I think you could really build a really solid business off of, from the ones we've tried, we personally use Tap Goods. It works out pretty well, and from what I've seen, they take care of a lot of customers and they make sure and make changes for them. The only thing I don't like about Tap Goods is how you have to set your website and stuff up, because you have to use just their setup on there. The second one is Good Shuffle Pro. As something, some other people have some issues with it. I know Marvin's Quest was recently talking about having some issues that he's had with it, or some of the limitations that he's had. But it really depends on kind of what you're going to do and stuff like that. It's just really hard for a rental company software to kind of really put this in place without just talking to a lot of customers. But these are like the top two I would see right now. I know people like Inflatable Office, all these things like that. I've only looked at the back end of a couple people done Inflatable Office and played around with it. It's just not something for me. Doesn't mean it's not bad, but I know a lot of people on Facebook love that. RW Elephant, that was something I would love to look into. Their software looks pretty, really good. We're going to be doing more reviews specifically on these softwares, going into depth in future videos. Now, the last one I think is really well, and this is one that we personally use on a regular basis, is our software. We're doing some betas right now, and eventually we hope to put this out. It's going to be a complete website integration, so everything flows seamlessly, but it's similar to other softwares, and we've taken some of the features from them and then also expanded on based on what we've needed. When you're choosing your software, you have a couple different features you really kind of want to have. You want to have something that manages your inventory. Pretty simple, straightforward. Go through, you can load up your inventory, it'll tell you if you're going to be overbooked. It can stop you from being able to overbook. You can have that setting up there, and it'll be able to manage the value of your inventory and then also be able to set some type of maintenance. Now, when you're doing your inventory, there's a couple different ways that it should be able to do it from there. You should do it from an actual item one, where if you have a throne chair and you want to have each throne chair kind of separated down to the bit so you can have photos of it and be able to do maintenance of them, and then you should have it as a group itemized too. So you have instead of throne chair A, B, and C, you have also like white chair, like white poly chair, and you have your 1,000 or 2,000, 3,000, how many of you have of those chairs. And you want to make sure that it can also store the value. Where did you get it from? How much you paid last time? Like how much has it going up and down? You can be able to see when the breakage is and be able to track that in the back end, so the system can tell you how long these chairs last based on the information. And you can be able to see if it's the chair's fault or your fault. Those are two things that I think work really well. But you also want to be able to have pick lists. You want to be able to determine where these items are in your warehouse and be able to put them in different places. I know Tapgood does very well on there. We basically took a lot of the features, that's features right there, out for theirs and put it into our software as we start going through. But I believe that is a really good way to do it right there. And then you want to have your inventory pull sheet so you can pull everything out and kind of know where everything is going. The second biggest feature, it has to integrate with your website. Website integration is very important. The reasons why I believe a lot of people do not succeed as much in this business, because they're having to take their quotes off of their website and then bring them to their actual rental software. It has to be a one-on-one connection. You want to have a clear, easy way to do a quoting system. I really recommend being able to have a quoting system on the front end. Either this can be through a cart system or a quote system or a mix of both. It just makes it a lot faster for them to go through and quote. Now, this is one thing that I have noticed from just some of the clients that we've worked with on the ad side and some of the clients that we work with as partners. Generally, when you do just the actual cart system, a lot of people do not understand how to actually use the cart system correctly. So you need to have that on your site if you plan to go like a bookable or one of those ways where you do some type of wish list. Generally, too, you need to really work on conversion and figure out what works the best. Let's say we compare our site versus another person's site, and like they got like almost twice the amount of clicks. I think it was about 100% uplift on conversions. But it wasn't just because the traffic was different. The site was pretty much the same as the layout of it, and it's the quoting system. And not a lot of people go through and do the actual quote and do the wish list correctly. Now, another thing I would say about the cart system, if you have a cart system, in the cart system makes the customer put in their information first, like their phone number, their name and email before they do the cart system. Those work a lot better for converting because you always have the information for the person. So even if they don't submit all their stuff up, you'll be able to save it in the back end and you have it set somewhere so you can reach out to them. Because you really want the people who are creating these quotes, you want to kind of have the information and stuff like that, because you really want to see what people are talking about. Because even if it's the price issue or whatever the issue is for them, you want to talk to them and you want to make decisions if you want to work with them or not work with them. Now, for us, we believe that you need to have some way to invoice the customers through your website. This could be through instant quotes, kind of like what we have on our software. I know Tap Goods has an instant feature too. Also Good Shuffle Pro. I don't know if the wish list is kind of allows you to do that. I prefer to have instant booking somewhat on for some of the things. It makes it a lot easier so you can make money overnight. Basically, you can run the business as like an e-commerce business. So you can run ads through, they can convert straight through. This has worked magic for us. But also too, I know some people kind of want to be touch more to them. For us, even if they book, we still reach out to them, we talk to them, we get all the information together, make sure they understand the contract, get the contract signed, kind of go through there. Even if it's an add-on feature or something you got to do, but you want to make sure you do your contracts and your invoices, so when they pay, a contract is automatically sent to them. Now, this is the biggest thing that a lot of people don't have in their systems and don't really understand, see the value maybe, but you want a CRM system. Even if you got to have a separate one or whatever it's going to be, a customer relationship management tool like makes the difference. It's a crazy how like you could just go to one of your customers' profile, pull up every order they have paid for, every piece of communication they have had, any page on the site that they have actually went to. Like that has made a huge difference for us. So you can look at the individual page, what have they looked at, what are they kind of interested in, who did they talk to, how is the tone of they when they went through there, what is the notes we have for the accounts, like what are their general average spend, where did they even come from, like were they a Google Ads leads, were they a regular Google leads from a Google Organic, did they come from Google Places, did they come from one of our emails campaigns, did they come from the blog, like all this stuff right here is a good place to know kind of where they are and who they are and how many times have they repeated business with you. And easily you could be able to see too if they do this every year, you can put them on your book of business, so you can make sure you reach out to them and get these things blocked in a lot earlier too as well. And I kind of recommend on some of the people who have done business with you 2-3 times in a row, give them a lower deposit so they can go in and lock the business in. And generally, like for us, we have a thing on here where you can tell if the person has done a review for you. You want to mark those people off because you want to make sure you really take care of those customers. If you don't have a CRM system in your software, I would recommend you working with free HubSpot. I know our software has a built-in CRM system. It's kind of the basic point of being able to know like all of our phone calls are recorded in there, all of our text messages to them back and forth are in there, and all of our emails from them to us it also put in there too, so we can kind of see the conversation flow and then kind of can break it down on there too. Also all the orders, any page on the website that they have went to has on there, how much they've spent with us, where did they come from, and then just a host of other information, you know, and other contacts, people that we might want to be able to reach out to and talk to. So here's a couple core things I know that we have in our software that we've built over the last 4 years. So the first thing, we have contract management. Obviously, you can manage your contracts, send them out, have them come back. Your delivery routes on there, you can have it automatically routed. You can easily go through and route them for people. You just have your customer pickups, so you can have other people to use your software. This could either be like your staff members, your drivers, your managers. Instant quotes, I believe we were one of the first people to do this, so we did this almost like 4 years ago, where you can choose your stuff. It'll tell you by the miles how far away, what it's going to cost for you. It's something that we built in there. I think other people have something similar to that now, but it's something that we've been working on and perfecting, and you can kind of tweak this in the software. Inventory management, kind of what we talked about before, generally being able to not overbook, to know when certain stuff is going to be available, to easily see. And also too, we have this one feature that we really like, is to kind of quickly see what other quotes have came up for that item, and you can be able to go through, and if you buy this item in the future, you might be able to go ahead and lower the price and work in discounts, working different things on that. It's really quickly easy to do it. Order management, manage all the orders, know where they're going and stuff like that, make sure that they're getting assigned, to see what's not getting assigned to routes and what hasn't gotten assigned, so you can make sure all that stuff is done. Also too, to be able to see what stuff you need to prep and what stuff you don't want to. We built in a review management into this. It's really simple. So basically on the site you go to, you can load up all your reviews and you have them show so people can see all the quick work you've done. And we're trying to put that prevalence because people really like to see that to your established business and you have reviews. Another thing that, just because we had this issue before, you want to have some type of security management system, some system so people can't do brute force attacks on you, SQL injections or anything like that. And also you don't want them to be doing DDoS attacks or anything like that. So we have a security setup on there that kind of allows you to monitor this stuff to see what people are getting traffic from, where they're getting traffic from, and to be able to disable certain countries from coming to your page, or to disable certain IP addresses who come through and just doing junk stuff through your quote system or anything like that. You can be able to disable them too as well. We set up a system where you can set up a blog on the back end. You need a note and log management to be able to see what changes have been done, who to make the changes. Now, the biggest thing that we're working on right now currently is the web tracking, and this is to be able to see exactly all this information of where the pages they went through, how long they were on that page. We're trying to help other rental companies similar to us. So if you want this, just look out and kind of look through the different features and see what works for you best. Now you need to know how to get clients to check that out. So if you're trying to get customers, these are the three areas I kind of want you to focus on. The three main things are going to be your website, your catalog, and then where you're getting your lead generation from. The first one is going to be how your website's set up and what you have on your website. Now, we have a free service that you can do. Basically, just drop the link down below, put your thing in there, and we'll do a website review for you. Now, we're getting to the main things right here. Now, these are three lead generation areas that we have to focus on. We're going to focus on SEM, which is search engine marketing. This is basically your paid advertisements at Google, Bing. These areas do very well. If you need help with this, we have an ad service. We can help you out with that. But also, too, in the ultimate checklist, we go through a lot of ways how to set up and everything up. And we have keywords and negative keyword lists so you can get started. Pretty much straightforward. This would be a very good driver of business. But this is only one part of the business. The last way is kind of, I believe, the most interesting. A lot of people don't do this way. And this right here is the difference between getting those really big jobs, or if some people say the secret off the market stuff. It's really talking to these people right here. It's doing cold outreach. Cold outreach is a marketing or sales strategy where a business or individual reaches out to potential customers or clients who have not previously expressed interest or interacted with the business. The outreach is typically done via email, calls, or messages with the goal of initiating a conversation, eventually converting the recipient into a customer or client. So don't think of this as the bad things that people are saying no. Just think of this as people are getting introduced to your business, even if they're not interested in what you have to offer. Now, for our event planners, they can get discounted rates, special access to new stuff we have coming out, and they can help dictate what stuff we purchase in the future. For small businesses, it's just really just keeping them in there, making sure they achieve their goals, and kind of making sure they stay underneath their budget and their plans and be able to get the outcome they want. More than that, for the businesses, it's not so much on the money. It's more about, are they going to reach their outcome, and can we do things in the way they need to do it to be able to make their boss happy? And then for event centers, you really have to figure out what stuff they don't offer and what stuff their clients need to be able to do some type of partnership. So if you have a lot of margarita machines and you know that event centers around you don't have those, or something else that you can do as kind of like an add-on feature to them. If you need help with any of these advertising methods, please reach out to us so we can help you out with every single thing. But also too, don't be afraid to dive in and tackle these things on your own and really learn about them. It also helps out even if you eventually work with someone later in the end as well. Now, the biggest thing is when you do SEM work, make sure you look at stuff in a checklist and it'll get you on a really good start and kind of get you where you need to go. If you're wondering what you need to do to provide better service for your clients, Steven would handle it from here.
This is how you show exceptional support for your customers, which can result in better business for you. First one is answering the phone. You want to call every single quote in at least 24 hours. This shows the customer that you're very eager to work with them and doesn't give them a lot of time to look at your competitors. Number two is asking for a review. First, you want to ask them how your overall service was. If they were happy with your service, that's when you go ahead and ask them for a 5-star review. Did you hear that? Not a 4, not a 3, a 5-star review. Now, if their service wasn't to their liking, the first thing you should do is address that problem and figure out what went wrong with the event. While the customer is explaining this, you want to be as empathetic as possible. Next, you want to come up with a solution that is happy for the both of you. And at the end of this process, you want to address this feedback within your company. This consists of taking the feedback from the customer and making any adjustments inside of your business to mitigate any more problems that could happen in the future. To do this, you need to compile all the complaints from past customers so you can reference it and make change so that in the future, when you reference this again, you can see if the correct changes were made. And the last point is to reinvest back into your business with a minimum of 10% and to a maximum of 25%. You're probably wondering, how much is this all going to cost? Well, Tina's gonna walk you through the financial breakdown of everything mentioned in this video.
Now that we've given you all the tools that you need to start your own rental business, I'm going to be breaking down the cost of everything mentioned in this video. I'm also going to be breaking down your expenses, revenue, and profits for the first 4 months of operations. So the first thing we need to find out is how much revenue are we generating in the first month? If you go back to the inventory segment, I told you how much you're expected to make from each of these items within the given week. So for tents, it was $1,125 per week. And for our chairs, it was $350 per week. For our 6 feet tables, it was $280. For our 60 inch round, it was $195. You'll add that together and it'll give you a total of $1,950. Now we're going to want to multiply $1,950 by 1.2. And the reason why we're doing that is because we're taking into consideration the revenues that you've made from your delivery costs, your damage waiver, which should be 10 to 12% of your subtotal, and other expenses that you may be charging your client. And after you're done multiplying that, you should get a total of $2,340 per week. However, we're going to round this up to $2,500 because we expect this number from the on-demand linen sales that we mentioned back in the inventory section. Now that we're expected to make $2,500 per week, I'm going to multiply that by 4 to find out the revenue of our first month. And it looks like our first month revenue is expected to be $10,000. To find the revenue of your remaining 3 months, so 4 months total, we're going to be using a compound interest calculator. All right, so right here, I have the compound interest calculator pulled up from investor.gov. The first thing you're going to put in is your initial investment amount. And for this, we're going to put $10,000 just because we know that that's how much we made from the first month of operations. And for the length of time in years, we're going to put 12. I know this is asking how many years. However, since we're going to be compounding this monthly, I'm just putting 12 so that we know it's 12 months in a year. All right, and for step three, you're going to need to know how much you're planning on reinvesting back into your business. So step three is the estimated interest rate. I know we're not doing interests for this. We're going to be calculating how much we're planning on reinvesting back into the business and how much we're expected to make from that reinvestment. So we recommend investing 15% of revenue back into the business. However, if you watch this entire video, the expected cost of starting an event rental company would be $20,000. Now, since we're only making $10,000 back in revenue within the first month, we're only receiving half of the initial investment back. This means that we're going to be reinvesting half of that 15%, and half of 15% would be 7.5%. So I'm going to put 7.5% into this calculator, and I'm going to click calculate. Now, this is going to give you your expected revenue for 12 months, starting with the $10,000 initial investment. Now, this compound interest calculator will give you your expected revenue for 12 months, starting with your initial investment of $10,000. Now that we've figured out your expected revenue for the rest of the month, let's try to find out your expenses for each month. The first thing we're going to have to do is you're going to have to identify your unfixed and fixed expenses. I'm going to be going over fixed expenses first. In this video, we were looking at a $16,000 car. Now, if you apply a 6.25 interest rate on that amount, you're expected to pay around $311.19 per month for your vehicle. Now, I will say your interest rate could be higher or lower depending on your credit score, depending on how much you're paying per month, if it's a new or used vehicle, and etc. So this is just the example that we're using. Next is your general liability. The average cost for that is $42, so we're going to keep that $42. Now we're going into property insurance. You're expected to spend $30 for every 200 square feet. Since we're starting with a 20 by 10 or a 200 square feet space, we're only going to be paying $30. We recommend that you get an additional 200 square feet of space for every $10,000 that you earn in revenue. This is so that you could accommodate for the growing inventory that you're reinvesting into your business every month. So once you get into $20,000 in revenue, you'll just double your initial storage space. So this may change your rent and your property insurance, as well as storage insurance if you're getting any. However, for the purpose of the first 4 months, you're not expected to double your revenue, so we'll keep it at the same rate. Now going on to website fees, which is an average of around $300 per month, we'll also add in auto liability, which is an average of $147 a month, as well as rent for the storage area that we were looking at, which we said was $185 per month. And if you're wanting parking from within that same storage unit, that'll be $75 a month. And lastly is storage insurance, which is expected to be $20 a month. Now I'm going to put all of this information into the calculator. So that's going to be $311.19 for your car payments, $42 for general liability, $30 for property insurance, $300 for website fees, $147 for auto liability, $185 for the storage unit that we discussed, $75 for that parking, and that equals a total of $1,110.19. Now, if you're not planning on purchasing a vehicle because you already have one, you could just subtract that $311.19 from our total, which would be $799 per month. So this would be everything without a car. And you know, same could be said about storage. If you are not planning on getting a storage space because you already have a garage, you could just eliminate that cost from your fixed costs. But for the sake of this video, we're going to continue with the car cost and storage cost. And one quick note that I would like to say, you know, you might be asking, Tina, why are you purchasing both property insurance and storage insurance? So storage insurance only covers a percentage of the items within your storage space. If you purchase property insurance, you'll get coverage for everything within that space. So we just try to be overly protected and get you coverage for everything possible. Now let's get into our unfixed expenses. For gas, you should be spending 2.1% to 3.2% of your monthly revenue. This could be anywhere from $48 to $72 per week. Now, we're wanting a 10 times return on our investment. And to do this, we're going to have to put 10% of our revenue into our marketing dollars. This means your ad spend or marketing spend should be $1,000 in the first month. And you'll just add $1 for every additional $10 that you make. I will say this method may change in your second year just because you'll have some repeat customers and your processes just might change. This is just so that whenever you start your business, you could have a faster growth. Now that we know what our fixed and unfixed expenses are, let's go into calculating your expected profits for your first 4 months of operations. To start, we'll need to calculate the rest of the expenses for month one. We know that our revenue is at $10,000, so if we take 10% of that for our marketing dollars, we'll spend $1,000 in marketing. Now let's say that for month one, our average gas spend per week is around $55. If you multiply this by 4 to get 4 weeks in a month, you'll equal to a monthly gas spend of $220. Now let's add this $220 with the $1,000 from our marketing, and we'll also add that onto the base cost of our fixed expenses, which was $1,110.19. This equals to $2,330.19. So that is our month one expense. Now we'll subtract this expense from the $10,000 that we generated in revenue. This will give us a profit just in our first month of $7,669.81. Now let's go on to month two. If we look at our compound interest calculator for month two, we should be expected to make $10,750. Now, if we consider that for our marketing, that would be $1,075. And if we consider our gas, which let's say our average weekly cost was $64, that would equal to $256 in gas spend for our second month. Let's add that on with our $1,075 for marketing, plus our base cost of all of our fixed expenses. That would leave our month two expense to $2,441.19. If we subtract this from the $10,750 that we're expected to make, this would leave our profits for month two to be $8,308.31. Now let's get on to month three. Back at our compound interest calculator, we could see that for month three, we're expected to make $11,556.25. If we take 10% of that, that would be $1,155.63 for your marketing costs. Now, let's say that for month three, we're averaging at $70 per week for our gas spend. That would equal to a monthly spend of $280. Plus our marketing dollars and our base fixed expenses, that would equal to the expense of month three to being $2,545.82. Now let's subtract that from our revenue of $11,556.25. This would leave you with a profit of $9,010.43 for your third month. Now let's get on to our fourth and final month. So for our fourth month, we're expected to make $12,422.97 in revenue. Let's calculate this for our expenses. Let's say for the fourth month, we're spending an average of $72 per week in gas, multiplied by four, which would give us a monthly cost of $288. Now let's add that onto our marketing cost. This is 10% of our monthly revenue, so our marketing cost should be $1,242.30. Now let's add that with our base fixed expenses, which would equal to $2,640.49 in expenses for your fourth month. Now let's subtract this from our revenue to get our profits. So with a revenue of $12,422.97 minus $2,640.49, that would give you a profit for your fourth month of $9,782.48. Now, if you kept your revenue calculation on until the 12th month, this would mean that you started your business on January and you're ending it on December, you're expected to have a high revenue range of $31,384.28, or to the low range of $22,156.09. And that concludes my calculation of everything discussed within this video.
Thank you guys so much for watching this video from start to end, all 11 parts. Hope you're already on your journey to making your $10,000. We put over 100 and something hours in this video. If you like these type of videos, please comment down below and like and share. And thank you so much for watching. And again, this is the Rental Boys, and we'll see you in the next one. Get that money.